Now is the winter of our discontent, says the Duke of Gloucester, soon to become Richard III in one of Shakespeare's most famous opening lines. And indeed the linkage of winter and discontent seems a match made in heaven. The cold temperatures seeping into our bones. The icy roads and pavements waiting for us to slip, slide and fall. The rain, sleet and snow falling incessantly from overcast grey skies. C.S. Lewis knew what he was doing when he made his evil queen, the White Witch, create endless winter in Narnia. The kind of winter that has been described as bleak, when frosty winds make moan and earth stands hard as iron. It's a far cry from childhood rhymes such as January brings the snow, makes our feet and fingers glow. We may dream of a white Christmas, but deep down we know that the picturesque blanket of white will all too soon turn to treacherous slush, just as the snowman's friendly crooked carrot nose will slip to the ground as he melts into nothingness. What profit can there be in dwelling on this time? Seasonally speaking, winter can feel like the blackest depression, when the earth is in the lowest of spirits, seas and lakes are steely grey, the trees are bare, their twigs standing black and stark against the pale, colourless skies. There are days when the sunshine and warmth seem so far away that it feels impossible that they will ever return. It's not surprising that the ancient Greeks explained winter as being the time of year when Demeter, the goddess of the earth, was mourning the absence of her daughter Persephone, who'd been tricked into spending half the year in Hades. For them, winter was the embodiment of the earth's depression. And we too often define winter as a time of absence. No colour, no warmth, no sunshine, no flowers, no leaves on the trees. But of course, this is only half the story. Perhaps you're already responding to this catalogue of gloom with a silent cry of, But what about the sparkling gleam of sunshine on frost crystals? What about the delicate intricacy of a snowflake, each one unique despite its smallness and transience? What about the thrill of seeing dainty footprints in the snow across the lawn as you open the curtains in the morning and realising you've had a timid, four-footed visitor in the night? Because of course there's always beauty in God's creation, if only we know where to look and how to be patient. As the book of Genesis reminds us, as long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Winter is as much a part of God's plan for the earth as is summer. The two are linked. We cannot have one without the other. Without winter cold, how would we recognise summer's heat? But the miracles of winter are not only found in brief glimpses of beauty. Hidden away far from sight, animals are hibernating. Lowering their body temperature and metabolic rates, they sleep, conserving strength for the good weather they know is ahead. And further out of sight, deeper underground, the roots of plants respond to the cold weather. For many plants, this period of cold is essential to their growth and development. Without the cold weather, they will not flower the following year. Without the prolonged period of cold, winter wheat will not sprout and grow, and there will be no grain for bread. Without the dormancy that winter brings, fruit trees will not blossom, denying insects their pollen and having no opportunity to fruit. Thus, winter paves the way for the beauties of spring and bounties of autumn. Perhaps we should not be surprised that some cultures see the winter solstice, the darkest day of the year, as a time of birth. T.S. Eliot's poem The Journey of the Magi famously begins with an evocation of a winter journey. A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. Eliot's magi journey on through more temperate times and places to reach their destination, but still remain unsure whether they journeyed to a birth or a death. The birth they witnessed was a hard and bitter agony for them. Winter is a time when the agony of the death of the old year and the pain of the new year's birth pangs seem to collide and clash. When does the old year finish and the new one begin? Our 12 strokes of midnight and the strains of Auld Lang Syne are very much a human construct, an artificial imposition of a marking point. Perhaps, like Eliot's Magi, we should be more cautious about separating the two in this season. Maybe we should stop looking for an artificial marker, a time to say, that is over, and now this begins. Maybe we should just learn to wait and watch with the uncertainty, knowing that deep down God is working. The hidden workings of winter, the empty time, are perhaps the holy Saturday of the year, when the deepest stirrings of life are in the tomb with death, both sealed off from our view as we wait and watch. For those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, Christmas reminds of the promise of this life. This is the time we have chosen to celebrate the light of a life that will always overcome the darkness of winter. Thus we recognise that winter is not a time of abandonment by God, but a time when his presence with us is most intense, so intense it becomes real, not in the way we might have hoped for, conquering the darkness with power and might, but in the form of our own human frailty, subject, like us, to the moaning of the frosty wind, the iron-hard earth, and the stone-like ice. When the White Witch plunged Narnia into a time that was always winter, never Christmas, she didn't realise that the real Christmas was one of frailty and vulnerability, that arrived not with a blast of Christmas music, the smell of mulled wine, and a bombardment of advertising as it does now, but that slipped in almost unnoticed, a birth of hard and bitter agony, in which the shadow of a death was also present. I have not here laboured to draw spiritual parallels with the season of winter. For each of us, our spiritual winters will be different. Just as happy families are all alike, but every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way, so a time of spiritual unhappiness is unique to the one experiencing it. Trying to persuade someone in the bleakness of what feels like spiritual winter that happy times are within their grasp seems to me akin to those medieval illustrations of the winter months as times of baking, feasting, and sitting by the fire, when actually we know that for most people the reality was the daily grind of going out to gather winter fuel. Whether our winter is brief and overshadowed by the obvious joys of Christmas, or Narnia-like seems prolonged and without respite, God is always present, working to bring life from dormancy and inertia. The calendar brings no Christmas feast to lighten the darkness of those who spend time in the far south, whose long sunless days fall in June, not December. But I don't think it's accidental that they often create a festival of their own during the darkest days of their year. This is no wishful thinking, but a deep-seated recognition of the hope we have in the turning of the seasons of creation, the coexistence of life and death, and the potential of winter to bring life, even when it seems most remote. You may be far from being in a spiritual winter at the moment. You may never have experienced one, and God may always have been as present in your life as the sun on a hot summer's day. But if this is not the case, then there's still no cause to despair. For God has given us in creation the gift of being able to see winter as a time of dormant vitality. We could even say of vital dormancy. And God has given us, in the incarnation, the gift of knowing that even in the midst of death, there is life and life in abundance. With that promise, it's not just our feet and fingers that should glow, but our hearts, however bleak the winter outside may seem.